Okay, welcome back to our discussion on relationship coaching. The next topic that I want to cover is education, not indoctrination. And so we can say that, and it's a really fun catchphrase, but what does it mean? What it means is that first you want to start by helping the people who are coming to you understand God's plan for relationships. So that's number one. Right? And all of that is backed up by the Word of God. It's not your opinion. Right? It's God's Word. Straight from the mind of the manufacturer on what His plan is. Then the next thing that we want to do is compare God's plan to the world. And in the beginning of our sessions, you have gotten a lot of information about what the world's plan is. But you're also going to get a lot of information from whoever that you're working with about how the world's plan is working out in their own life, right? And so you really want to make a comparison. Next, we want to apply God's plan to gain insight into past experiences. And this is one of the things that happens to people once they have the blueprint, once they go like, wow, this is the roadmap, right? It is a spiritual experience that can shake somebody to the core when they finally realize that, you know, they could have gone down a road that was 4 miles long to get to the grocery store, we'll say, but instead they've been making a 2-day journey over a mountain, right, to get to the same location. So you're going to have people who go, if they're going to have a lot of guilt. They're going to have a lot of regret. They're going to have a lot of remorse for things that have happened. And they might even have a lot of resentment for things that have happened to them, right? If only somebody else would have known. If only somebody else wouldn't have done this. Or if only somebody else would have told me. So you're also going to want to be prepared to be a support person there for them. Right? And we also want to be able to talk to them about God's promises on the years that have been taken away and how He's going to restore those. Right? You might have people who are 50 years old who've gone through a lifetime of not having the map, and they've been searching for the truth. Right? But nobody's told them. So, and then we want to talk about implementing God's plan for future success. So as you can see, none of these things here involve your opinion, right, or your will, or any of that. These all involve education. And so when you talk about implementing God's plan for future success, you're really going to help them come up with, you know, now that you understand this, how is it that you want to implement that, and how can I help you do that? And we're going to talk more about that as we go on. And again, you want to withhold judgment. You also want to ask questions, right? So that they can really tell you their story. There's something about even being able to tell the story, especially when you're going through a relationship breakup or a divorce, that's really important. And having someone just witness that with you and feel what you're feeling, right? And then you want to guide the client to see, hear, and apply God's plan. Okay. Matthew 13:46, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls, and upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. You're going to see this happen with coaching clients who are coming to you, who especially who might not be Christian, who are ready to abandon their past lifestyle and maybe break up with a boyfriend or girlfriend or get out of a bad relationship, maybe move out of a cohabitating situation, right? They're willing to give up that lifestyle, even maybe some friendships, because they see the value in the kingdom and that everything that they're looking for is inside that pearl. Right? So this is the really beautiful part of being able to educate people on what's the kingdom design for relationships. And people recognize it as the truth, right, when they hear it. So matchmakers as coaches and ministers. One thing that I like to say is that God is the only relationship expert. I never, never, never refer to myself as a relationship expert. I am a relationship student of God. So God is the only relationship expert. I do call myself a relationship coach and also a love evangelist, but never an expert. Now, I believe that the church should be at the forefront of relationships. We spend a lot of time talking about, publicly out there. We spend a lot of time talking about marriage and families as a building block for society. We've discussed that that's the second building block. The first is the individual. But nonetheless, God invented relationships. God designed them. God is the manufacturer of relationships. And everything else out there is confusion, as we can see, and produces results that nobody wants to have in their life. Right? And so, why isn't the church at the forefront of relationships? Why are we hearing names like Match.com and eHarmony and not names like Christian Leaders Institute? Right? As a church, we should be at the forefront of relationships. When people think of, I'm looking for advice about having a relationship, they should be thinking of going to a minister, not going to a coach on the internet, right, who did an experiment of going on 100 dates and finally found somebody. But singles in the church have really taken a back seat, and it's very unfortunate because people go elsewhere. Now, 40 to 60% of adult congregations are single. That is a huge number. Many of those people don't want to be single. And some of the things that hold them back are, first of all, there's no resources available at the churches. For example, there might not be a singles group that's available there. The next thing is that they might be embarrassed about their past relationship failures. Maybe they're a twice divorced person, and they just feel really embarrassed about that. And they might also think that, as a result of that, let's say they're a woman, they might think as a result of that, a good Christian man might not want them. Right? Which is a distortion, unfortunately. And then there's also an imbalance of women in churches. And the book that I referred to earlier, Datanomics, that I recommend that you all take a look at, actually looked at churches and found that there are more women than men in churches. So with that imbalance, what do we have? We have a lack of commitment that happens, right? So this is a phenomenon that's really happening in our churches. Now, I might get some pushback on this, and that is totally okay. While I support the worship team, I actually feel that having men wearing skinny jeans singing love songs to Jesus for an entire hour is a very feminine thing. And I do think that it scares masculine men away. I also think that there are plenty of men who actually do like to sing. And the church choir in a lot of places going by the wayside is really something that saddens me. And when you talk to older people, so many of them will talk to you about their experiences in the church choir. Not because they wanted to be professional musicians. 99% of them weren't. But just because they really loved to sing in the church choir. And I believe that there are many matches that have been made in the church choir. So that method of people really participating is something that in a lot of places has gone by the wayside. I think that it's unfortunate. I really do. I also think that it's very unfortunate that a feminine perspective and women are really dominating the church. It is imperative that we have men come back into the churches in leadership positions and participating in the church. And I don't know if that's football night, fantasy football night, some kind of sports event, but I think that as a matchmaker, one of the things that you want to talk to your church leaders about is having programs that attract men to come to the church. I think it's really important. Otherwise, you have the women who are looking for the man outside the garden and trying to drag him back in. That's the position that your female church members are being put in by the church, not actively, aggressively looking to grow the single male congregation, part of the congregation. So, and the thing is that when these things aren't available, people go elsewhere. So these 40 to 60% of adults who might be single who are sitting in church on Sunday, finding nothing there who can help them, by the time they're in their car in the parking lot, they're checking their online dating profile. They're checking their messages to see if anyone's contacted them to go out on a date or get together that day. So we are failing as a church by not being on the forefront and the front lines of love. Okay, so the coaching program, 5 weeks. 5 weeks is sometimes not enough time, but it's a short enough amount of time that people are willing to commit to it. And once they really get to know you and start to see some results, many times they're willing to renew for another 5 weeks to keep working with you in a coaching aspect. So 5 weeks is a great way to start out. The coaching should be one-on-one. I don't like group coaching. I don't think a lot of people, especially men, want to be in group counseling situations, right? So really one-on-one. And the other thing is that you can really laser focus in on the issues that are unique to that individual. So I like a 5-week coaching program that has a template, that has some certain topics that we're going to cover and talk about, but is also flexible enough that you can address the topics that are specific to that person, right? And the things that we also like to talk about, of course, are science. What is the biochemical hormonal component to love and relationships, which we haven't talked about yet, but we will. Psychology. We want to add psychology in there. We want to add biblical wisdom, and we also want to add that person's personal love blueprint. And we're going to get to how to do all of these things. First, we want to do an intake about the client. So I am going to present to you the how you would do matchmaking as a professional. Right? Now, if you're doing things more casually, if this is a bivocational ministry, if this is a volunteer position, and you're doing things a little more casually and differently, I think that that's okay. But I do want to recommend that you stick to these principles as closely as possible, whether you're charging for them or not. Because there's a level of thought and professionalism that goes into every single one of these steps that is going to affect your outcome and the experience that the person that you're working with is going to have. So what you want to do is you want to start out with a free 15-minute phone consultation. And you want to ask important questions in that conversation, such as, you know, what is your name? How old are you? Where do you live? What's your occupation? Do you have any kids? And you're going to get a lot of information in this. Next question, most important question. How long have you been single and looking? You're going to get a lot of different answers from, well, I just broke up with my boyfriend 3 weeks ago and I've been on the internet and I don't really like it, so I thought I'd call you. This is somebody who probably is not going to wind up going through matchmaking. They just haven't been through enough, probably yet at this point, okay? So you're going to get everything from that to, I was married for 40 years, and I've been widowed for 2, and I think maybe I'm ready to meet someone, but I'm not sure. Right? It's going to run the gamut. So you're going to get a lot of information from how long have you been single and looking. Your next question, well, what other methods have you tried to meet someone? And then they're going to tell you, I've tried online dating, and here's the 5 websites that I went on. I have worked with another matchmaker. I've worked with a dating service. My friends have introduced me. Or I haven't done anything. Right? So you're going to get a lot of information in that question, too. The next question, what are your challenges in finding a relationship? Some people, it's going to be easy. They're going to say, well, I'm just really busy. I'm new to the area. I just moved here. I don't know anybody. I don't have a network. You know, or it might be something else. Maybe they have a health challenge. Then you're going to get some other interesting answers from successful women, especially. Well, men are intimidated by me. right? You're going to, because I'm so smart and so successful. So you're going to find out a lot of information in this. It's really going to help you figure out where to go. Next question. Well, what prompted you to call a matchmaker? Why now? And the next question is, how would you like me to help you? Right? You're really going to find out at this point if you have somebody who is really serious about taking a look at themselves and getting help, or if you want have somebody who is, you know, a 60-year-old guy who wants to meet girls in their 40s, right? And that's not going to be something that you're going to be able to help them with, probably. So you're going to get a lot of really good information on this call. At that point, if they seem like that they would be a good candidate for your program, you are going to ask them if they would like you to explain how the process works. So the first part is really you listening, and now you're going to go into a part where you're really explaining. And so how does the process work? Well, the way the process works is that we like to do a one-hour consultation so we can really get to know each other. I do those consultations either in person or over Skype. The next part of the process is after our consultation, when we really get to know each other, if we mutually agree this would be a good fit and you feel like we could help you and we feel like you'd be a good fit for our program, the next thing that we do is a 5-week coaching process. The reason that we do this 5-week coaching process is that we found that our success rate is directly effective and unheard of in the entire dating industry as a result. And then once we finish the coaching, then you're fully prepared and ready to go into the matchmaking process. What is the matchmaking process? Well, in the matchmaking process, all of the matches are handpicked. So sometimes when you say, oh, I'm a matchmaker, I do matchmaking, people say, oh, like match.com. No, this is not online dating. This is a highly personalized process. Okay, so the matches are handpicked. Now, when we make a match, this is something that people also want to know about the process. When we make a match, we do send photos and profiles. What's great is through Matchmaking Ministry, we have the technology that matchmakers can use, a CRM program, where they can actually manage all of their matches. So the people can go online, they can fill out their profile. The profile goes into a private system only accessible by the matchmaker. But they do see their photos and they see their profile. The person gets a username and password, so they can also go in and edit or update that information as they need to. And then when the matchmaker finds a match, they can send that profile to the match. Okay? So really exciting that we have that to offer our matchmakers. And even if people are doing matchmaking as a hobby, I highly recommend that they use the software. You're going to meet somebody that you're going to think of 2 years later or 6 months later, and you're not going to remember all the details. And you're going to want to have something that you can go back to and refresh your memory, contact them, stay in touch with them. So I believe everyone should really use the software. So you tell them we show photos, there's no blind dates, and we'll show you their profile so that you can learn more about them. But because we've met them, we can also answer any questions that you might have. So this isn't online dating, right? We can find out the answer to any question that you might have. And if we don't know the answer, we can find it out. The next thing, so we do that on a personal call where you can ask questions. Then the next thing is that if there's a yes on both ends, we go ahead and we make a reservation for the two of you to meet. Okay? Now, there are a couple reasons for this, and let me go into the logistics. Whenever I make a match, I go to the gentleman first. And the reason that I go to the gentleman first is that if he is not interested in meeting her, I never contact her. Men can handle rejection. Men are used to approaching women and women saying no, and, you know, it's kind of like sales, right? It's a numbers game. Men are used to that. Women are not. It is crushing to women to be rejected. So you never, never, never want to present a match to a woman first. Always present it to the man. If he says yes, then you call her. If you have two yeses, then you have a match. The next thing that you want to do is you do not want to give him her phone number. There are a couple reasons for this. Women don't like online dating. They're so excited to work with a matchmaker because of safety and privacy. They love it. So that's number one. Number two is that the clients screw up the match. They do. They screw it up on the phone. And so they'll get on the phone, and I'll tell you what, you have people who are tired of dating. They are so sick of it. They've gone on so many crappy dates where they could have stayed home and watched Netflix by themselves, right, gone to get a massage, hung out with their friends who are really cool that they really like, right? And so they don't want to waste any more time. They are sick of it. And so guess what they do? They pick up the phone and they try and do a phone screening. They ask every question they should never ask, looking intentionally for red flags. And what happens when you are trying to find something wrong? You're going to find it. That's right. And then the match falls apart. Right? Or maybe they'll call you and say, well, I didn't like his voice on the phone. Or, you know, she sounded like a, you know, she just sounded really rude. Well, maybe you called her when she was, you know, just got out of a meeting and got yelled at with her boss, and she was rushing to another meeting but didn't want to miss your call. But she was short with you. Right? You just don't know. And so people come up with so many stories and so many ideas about the person just from a quick little phone call. Other people will do what I call a phone date. They try to bypass getting together in person. They will stay on the phone for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, or, you know, multiple hours a couple days in a row before they even meet each other. People will be inappropriately familiar, where you might talk to them and they'll say, hey, you know, are you available for lunch on Tuesday? And you say, well, no, I'm so sorry. Tuesday I have a dentist appointment, but I could do Thursday. All of a sudden on Tuesday you're getting a text message from them, you know, going, I hope your dentist appointment goes great. And you're like, I don't even know you. I haven't even met you. Right? So, and people are trying to text and be, you know, start this conversation over the telephone first. It's a huge, huge problem. And inevitably somebody says, I don't want to go out with them. I do not want to meet them. And that's it. Poof, your match is over. So I get both of their schedules, and I call a restaurant where I can make a reservation. The reason I do that is because there is a hostess involved. And I'm not working 24 hours a day, nor do I want to. So if they're going to dinner at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, I don't have to worry about sitting by my phone in case somebody's going to be late or gets lost, right? Here's where the reservation is. Here's the phone number and the address for the restaurant. If you get lost or you're running late and you want to let your date know or you need some help, call the hostess, okay? So we make a reservation somewhere nice for them to meet. Now, I like one-hour meetings. No one ever abides by this rule, so I've now said 60 to 90 minutes, right? A three-hour to a five-hour date is not a success. It is potentially a waste of time. That's number one. Number two, men get swept up in the moment and having fun, but men actually develop feelings for women when they're away from them. Right? Men are logical thinkers. And when, see, the men are all nodding, right? When they're away from them and not in their presence, right, then they think about it. I need my guys to go home and sleep on it before they, I don't want them calling me on the way home from the date. I want them to go home and sleep on it and call me the next day or the day after and tell me what their thoughts are about that date. So, you know, a 3 to 5 hour date with a guy who got swept up into the moment, who then decides he's not interested, he calls from the women. I thought he was really into me. He was really there. He was so present. I felt like we had a connection, right? And then she's really disappointed. And it's a common thing that happens. So 60 to 90 minutes for a first date is appropriate. And it's not even really a date. If you meet somebody on the internet, if you're introduced by a mutual friend, if you meet by a matchmaker, right, it is gathering data. It is not a date. Okay? So second time you get together, he can invite you for a date and a nice steak dinner or an activity or whatever it is that you want to do. But I call it gathering data. So we make a reservation. Of course, then they show up, they meet each other. Everybody's excited to meet each other because they already know a ton about each other, Okay? They feel like they already know each other. And in a lot of cases, a matchmaker feels like a mutual friend. You've really spent a lot of time with these people. They've told you, you know, all their hopes and dreams and biggest disappointments in relationships, right? So you really have a close relationship with them at this point. Now, after the match, you get feedback. And so we want to hear 24 to 48 hours later from both parties, three questions. What did you like about your match? Is there anything you didn't like about your match? And would you like to see them again? And you're going to get a whole range of issues. One of the things that happens that's really interesting in this process is not only do you learn about the other person, the things that they would never tell you about themselves, you also learn a lot about your client and how they're interacting with people and processing other people's behavior. This is a huge, huge insight for the matchmaker on every level. The feedback part, I'd say, is the most important part of the matchmaking process. And also, you are able in this situation to fix any miscommunications that I've had. So one of the big things that people talk about today in dating is ghosting. Right? I met somebody, it seemed like things were really great, and we really had a connection, then I never heard from them again. And this happens not just after one date, sometimes it happens after 3 dates, 5 dates, 3 months, and somebody just disappears, never talks to him again, never takes their phone calls, boom, ghosting. It's a thing. So, he's looking at me really confused. He's been married for a long time, hasn't done this internet dating thing. People really do that? Yes! People are doing that. And so what's great is with matchmaking, there's no ghosting. You are finding out on both sides. Now, there are ways you can deal with feedback. Some feedback you need to deliver right away, right? You know, hey, Bob, I found out that you had 4 drinks on your date. That's really kind of a lot. I'm not even sure if I feel comfortable sending you out again. Is there something going on? Right? Something you need to address right away. Now, there are other things that are small little complaints. And here's the thing. When people aren't attracted to each other and they don't have chemistry with each other, things that they would totally blow off with chemistry become like a major point of contention with whoever they went out with, right? So you could have a huge list of complaints about this person that somebody who's interested in them would never have. So some feedback you've got to store up and you don't share it right away. You wait for you till you get feedback 3 or 4 or 5 times and see a pattern, and then you deliver it. And what's nice is that also delivering it in that way, you're not saying, well, like Susie said or Jan said, it's like, well, I'm seeing a pattern in the feedback that I've looked at that XYZ continues to happen, right? For example, you know, you've been out on 4 or 5 dates and I'm seeing a pattern in the feedback that you keep talking about your ex-wife. And it seems that the dates are kind of turning into more of a complaint session and venting and a therapy session about your ex-wife. And, you know, the women are really getting the impression that you're not interested or ready to meet somebody else. Maybe we should talk about that, right? So this is kind of a pattern that's going to develop over time. Then the other thing with the feedback processes is that you can clear up miscommunications. So, for example, we had a girl, her name was Jennifer. She was absolutely beautiful, Jennifer Aniston-looking girl next door. And none of her first dates were leading to second dates. And we just couldn't understand why. So we went through the feedback, and we realized what was happening. She was a PhD student. She also was a teacher assistant in her PhD program, and she wasn't supposed to have a job outside of school, but she did. And so she was really busy. And one of the things that she kept saying to the guys on the dates was, oh, man, I'm just so busy. Well, the guys were interpreting that as her gentle way of communicating to them that she wasn't interested in going out with them again. So they weren't asking her out again. So we cleared that up. We shared that feedback with her. She stopped doing it. And not too long after that, she started getting second dates. And not too long after that, she wound up meeting a guy she really liked. And they ended up hitting it off and starting a relationship. So this is the most critical component of the matchmaking process. And I think it's also a really good place for us to take a break.